From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, the next batch of James Comey's memos. In them, Comey tells the president that he needs to stop trying to discuss ongoing investigations with him. And Comey shares his fears about Trump with a friend over lunch. That friend talks on the record and on tape to the Times. It's Friday, May 19th. Michael.
Yes.
Good to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me.
Mike Schmidt is continuing to report on the interactions between FBI Director James Comey and President Trump in the lead up to Comey's firing. What is the latest from the Comey memos?
The latest we know is that President Trump called Mr. Comey several weeks after Trump took office and asked Comey whether he was under investigation and when the Justice Department was going to get word out on that. And Comey told Trump, hey, you can't come to the FBI for investigative questions. You got to follow the proper procedures, the DOJ guidelines, and go to the Justice Department. This is not the way it's supposed to be.
So the FBI director basically said, it sounds to me, stop calling me, stop bugging me.
Basically said, look, that there are lanes of the road that are established here. To Comey, the independence of the FBI was the most important thing. He didn't want them to be influenced at all by the president. And Comey basically said, look, there's a way that is set up for you to deal with the FBI, and that doesn't include the president calling him to ask about investigations.
Let's talk about how you learned about these interactions that you're describing day after day. After you break a very hard-to-break story, like the one that you did just a couple of days ago about the existence of the Comey memos and what they can tell us, is it the case that more and more people just start coming forward? Is that what's happening here?
I think that if you're a Comey defender out there, you want as much sunlight on this as possible because they think that Comey did a lot of right things here and the president did a lot of wrong things here. And I'm just pushing as hard as I can on a lot of doors in that world to try and find out everything I can about the interactions between the two of them.
So most of these conversations, I'm going to imagine, are off the record. But recently you found someone willing to talk on the record, right?
After we broke the story last week about this loyalty dinner where Trump had asked Comey to pledge his loyalty to him at this one-on-one dinner at the White House, a friend of Comey's, this guy named Benjamin Wittes, called me and he said, come over to my office. I want to talk. So I went over to his office up the street, and Wittes said, look, I had lunch with Comey in March. He expressed some things to me in confidence at the time that I never thought I would talk about publicly. But in light of what has gone on, I want to tell you and tell the public what I know about what Comey was thinking in March.
And you recorded that.
Correct.
So I want to be clear about what our relationship is, and I also want to be clear about why I'm talking to you on the record.
Wittes actually wanted me to record it to create a record, but he also said, look, I know this may be subpoenaed, I know whatever, but he says, look, I'm on the record. I want to lay this out. I don't want Trump accusing us of leaks. I don't want, this isn't a leak. This is on the record. This is what Comey was saying to me.
Given that Trump is tweeting about leaks, and that there's a lot of people who, when they talk to the press, can't be on the record and can't say what the actual context is of how they know what they know. I can. I'm never going to have a government job. I don't want a government job. I'm not bound by any restrictions other than honor. And so I feel I can be transparent, so I should.
What is Ben Wittes' relationship with James Comey?
So Wittes has known Comey for about more than a decade. Wittes edits this thing called Lawfare Blog. They have a lot of mutual friends in sort of this legal national security world. Wittes does not consider himself part of Comey's inner circle.
I had lunch with Jim Comey. We email. We're friends. We communicate about things.
Wittes would occasionally go over to the FBI every few months and have lunch with Comey and talk to him about you know, everything is going on. They have a lot of shared interests. Mm-hmm. Comey can be a bit of a legal nerd, and Wittes is one. So they would chew the fat over national security mm-hmm. law.
He told me how he was feeling about some things and some things that happened, and I've taken it on myself to call you and tell you about them.
I get it.
I'm not anybody's surrogate, and I'm not laundering information that anybody is trying to leak. And it's important to me to be able to say that because the president this morning tweeted a threat to Jim Comey about leaking.
Well, tell me about the conversation you had with Wittes. Walk us through it.
So what Wittes did was he laid out a series of things Comey had told him that really bothered him about Trump and about things that had gone on with the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing that Wittes points out...
So the first is the incident around the hug.
...is the hug.
Do you remember the hug?
So let's... and there's Jim. Will you please? He's become more famous than me.
2 days after Trump is sworn in, there is a ceremony in the Blue Room at the White House for law enforcement folks who had provided security for the inauguration.
He's uncomfortable being there.
Comey didn't want to go.
And he really didn't want to want there to be any sort of sign of intimacy with the president.
Comey knew that the perception was that he had helped Trump get elected. He never wants to have a close relationship with the president, regardless of who it is. And
he wanted to reestablish the norm that the president and the FBI directors they're not buddies. They're not, you know, they don't communicate on investigative matters at all.
But Comey realized that he had to go. He represented the Bureau. The Bureau had provided security. You know, if you're invited to the White House, You go to the White House. So Comey goes over there, you know, a bit concerned about it. And
when he went into the room, you know, there was a large group of people there. And
Comey's wearing a blue suit, dark blue suit.
And he specifically told me that he kind of went to the part of the room where there was like the same color drapes to try, and he sort of like spent and tried to blend in with the background.
And he's trying sort of blend in with the curtains in the back of the room because he doesn't want Trump to see him.
But he's trying to blend into the curtains in the White House and like basically blend into the walls.
The idea of Jim Comey trying to blend into anything is pretty funny, but I think
Why?
He was just scrambling. Well, he's 6'8".
Now, when you're 6'8", like blending in is a lost cause.
So he's standing in the back trying to blend in with this thing, thinking, oh, God, like, you know, like when you're sitting in class, I hope I don't get called on.
Right.
You know, being there and really trying to blend in and kind of getting away with it or thinking he'd gotten away with it for a long time. And then
Trump spots him
kind of right at the end. Trump goes over to him.
And Wittes describes to me that Comey is basically determined not to hug Trump. He's like, this is going to be bad.
What he said is like, there couldn't be a hug. There wasn't going to be a hug. I tried to make it a handshake and he tried to grab me.
Comey goes in for a handshake. Trump goes in for a hug and it looks like Trump kisses Comey.
This made Jim extremely uncomfortable. And he definitely interpreted it as a specific effort to compromise him with a show of closeness.
For Comey, this is sort of the worst case scenario. This is looking chummy with the president, a president who could be unpredictable, a president who Comey was accused of getting elected.
Mm-hmm.
And Comey likes his independence.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't mess with Comey's independence. If you do that, then Comey starts to build paper trails, to sort of get his ducks in a row against you.
Second incident, he said he was about to get on a helicopter, and his phone rings, and it's the White House, and the president wants to talk to him. So he said, you know, you don't get on the helicopter when that happens. So he takes the call, and it's Trump, and he just wants to chit-chat. Again, he didn't tell me like what specifically they said. What we talked about was the tone of it, which was very much like the hug, right? That this was an effort to, he perceived it anyway, as an effort to kind of envelop him and implicate him in Trump's thinking and way of being.
What it says is that, look, Trump asked Comey for his loyalty.
He was uncomfortable because he hadn't gotten the loyalty pledge, and he was probing him for, you know, kind of, can we be friends?
And what Comey tells Wittes is that he thought that Trump was really bothered by this and was still trying to win Comey over. He's still trying to probe, still trying to bring him on and win him on.
He'd asked for loyalty. He hadn't gotten it. And so now he's going to kind of drape himself over you to implicate you in his being.
But Comey thought at some point along the way that he had trained the White House to keep a distance, but you're also making it sound like Wittes makes clear from his conversations with Comey that whatever understanding they all thought was in place was constantly being tested, maybe even violated.
The discussions that Comey has where he sort of brushes Trump back and says, look, you got to go through the Justice Department, come after these interactions where the dinner, the meeting in the Oval Office.
Got it.
So Comey's sitting there eating a sandwich. Wittes is having a salad. They're in Comey's office, and Comey's saying, you know, I think I've gotten this in a good place.
I think we've got them so that they understand they can't ask for investigative information. They can't.
Look, I think we've really, you know, sort of got them trained, and they know the lanes of the road.
You know, they got to go through the normal channels, and there's a lot we're not going to say.
And, yeah, the White House knew the lanes of the road, and they were getting ready to get rid of Comey.
How much longer was it after this conversation over the salad in Comey's office that he was no longer the FBI director?
A little more than a month.
It feels especially tricky for Comey to try to recover from this really brutal campaign season in which he's seen as helping one candidate, hurting another candidate, because while he's trying to reestablish his independence after November 8th, he's dealing with a president who seems to be making that as difficult as possible.
I think that Comey, as Wittes points out, Comey knew that he was in for a long 4 years and that this was going to be a very difficult thing to manage, as he had sort of lost some support from Democrats on the Hill, but at the same time had to manage a relationship with Trump and an investigation into Trump. And I think that our reporting has shown that Comey may have known this was coming in the back of his head and may have known that this may have been in maybe not the worst thing in the world for him to lose his job.
He was not trying to save his job with Trump. When Trump says that, it's a bald-faced lie. He was trying to keep Trump away from the Bureau and protect the Bureau from Trump, and he was willing to lose his job over it, and he did.
And the person Trump said was responsible for Comey losing his job, Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general, he comes up in your conversation with Wittes. A few weeks after Trump appointed Rosenstein, he wrote the letter that Trump used to justify firing Comey. What did Wittes say about Rosenstein?
It was interesting. Wittes says that he's sitting there eating with Comey, and he says, well, it's a good thing that they're about to get Rod confirmed as the deputy attorney general. You have a permanent Senate-confirmed deputy attorney general. And to Wittes' surprise, Comey says,
Rod's a, you know, a solid guy, but he's also a survivor. And you don't get to be a survivor for that long without making some compromises. And I've got concerns about that.
And what Wittes said was, if Trump was trying to get Comey to pledge his loyalty, then what did Rod have to give up to do what he did?
I read that now as you get asked to kiss the ring, you get asked to kiss the ring, you get asked, how many times do you get asked before you kiss the ring?
Thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions? I'm shocked. John, go ahead.
On Thursday, during a joint news conference with the president of Colombia, President Trump was directly asked if he had ever interfered with the FBI's investigation into possible collusion between his advisors and Russia.
Did you at any time urge former FBI Director James Comey in any way, shape, or form to close or to back down the investigation into Michael Flynn? And also, as you look back...
No. Next question.
Next question. As you look back over the past 6 months or year, have you had any recollection where you've wondered if anything you have done has been something that might be worthy of criminal charges in these investigations or impeachment, as some on the left are implying?
I think it's totally ridiculous. Everybody thinks so.
We'll be right back. Here's what else you need to know today. Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General, was called to a Senate briefing on Thursday to discuss the events leading to the firing of FBI Director James Comey. Under questioning, Rosenstein told senators that he knew President Trump planned to fire Comey before he wrote the letter criticizing him.
He did acknowledge that he learned Comey would be removed prior to him writing his memo.
Say that again. He what?
He knew that Comey was going to be removed prior to him writing his memo.
That disclosure raises the possibility that Rosenstein could become a witness in the new investigation into the Trump campaign's ties to Russia, being run by Special Counsel Robert Mueller.
I think it divides the country.
Trump is calling the appointment of a special counsel a witch hunt.
I think we have a very divided country because of that and many other things.
Finally, the president leaves today on his first trip overseas since taking office. He'll start in Saudi Arabia, proceed to Israel, then Belgium, and end in Italy. Trump will be abroad for 9 days. My colleague Maggie Haberman reports that he doesn't want to go, telling friends he's reluctant to leave the comforts of the White House for high-pressure meetings with foreign leaders. The Daily is produced by Theo Balcom, Lindsay Garrison, Rachel Quester, and Andy Mills. Lisa Tobin is our executive producer. Samantha Hennig is our editorial director. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. Special thanks to Sam Dolnick, Peter Sale, Pedro Azzotto, and Michaela Bouchard. And thanks to my colleagues, Matt Apuzzo, Glenn Thrush, and Mike Schmidt for their incredible generosity this week.